Eh, akahele, if you haven't seen episode 2 yet, there's a spoiler alert, so you may want to come back later or skip ahead to the 5-minute mark. Mahalo for listening, and we hope you enjoy this episode of Feathers and Fire.
Aloha, you are listening to Feathers and Fire, the limited series after show podcast discussing each episode of the Apple TV Plus series Chief of War. I'm one of your hosts, Russell Subiono.
Aloha mai, and I'm your co-host, Mehanema Kainai. Last night was the second of the first two episodes of Chief of War. It premiered, giving us a glimpse into where the season is headed, the introduction and development of a number of central characters, and some early plot twists, leaving us wondering and guessing as to what will happen next, setting the stage for what Russell and I both believe will prove to be a compelling season.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I am 100% compelled thus far. And I don't know this story well, so I'm along for the ride and watching it for the first time, really like everybody else. Plus, you know, seeing friends and other known Hawaii actors on the screen, it just kind of keeps pulling me deeper and deeper into the story. Any episode 2 of a series is like a really crucial moment. Lots of choices to make. I feel like if you've had a strong first episode, you got to ask yourself, do you repeat its structure and keep giving people what they are used to? Or do you subvert expectations and do something completely different? And I think if you want to keep your audience for the long haul, you throw them a curveball so they get used to being on their toes, or like you said, wondering and guessing as to what will happen next. And I think they do an excellent job of that in this second episode. So let's recap the episode. We start out with the introduction of Ka'ahumanu, played by New Zealand-raised actress Luciani Buchanan. Ka'ahumanu is a major character in this series. She is the daughter of Ke'eaumoku, a chief from the Kingdom of Hawaii, who is also introduced early in this episode. Ke'eaumoku is played by veteran Hawaii actor and acclaimed playwright Moses Goods. We learn that Ke'eaumoku has arranged for Ka'ahumanu to become the wife of another Hawaii island chief, Kamehameha. We then cut to the aftermath of Kahikili's invasion of Oahu, where Ka'iana and his family have been placed under guard. They eventually escape and head from Maui to reunite with Heke. As Ka'iana and his family are paddling back to Maui amidst the storm, lightning flashes, and we see the silhouette of a European-masted ship in the fog. Kahikili's army follows them to Maui, so Ka'iana leads the army away from his family. While on the run, the rest of his family trek to Iao Valley to find Heke, where she is making offerings to the gods. We cut to shots of the European sailors landing on Maui to resupply, and then to Ka'ahumanu in the caves where she grew up, reluctantly preparing for her voyage to Hawaii Island. Ka'ahumanu's mother sends her to speak to Taula, the seer. It is revealed that Ka'ahumanu will not bear children for Kamehameha and will, quote, break the world. And we'll talk more about that in the categories. Meanwhile, Maui's army continues to chase Ka'iana. He eventually finds refuge in the same cave system where Ka'ahumanu has been preparing for her departure. She offers to take Ka'iana and his family to Hawaii Island with her, but on their way to meet up with his family, they run into the crew from the European ship. Maui's army then changes course and picks up Ka'iana's trail again. He sends Ka'ahumanu to find his family in Iao Valley, while he once again draws Maui's army elsewhere. Then we see a series of shots of the European sailors returning to their ship, and Ka'ahumanu and Ka'iana's family leaving for Hawaii Island with one of the European sailors who apparently got separated from his crew. The climax of this episode takes place at the edge of a high sea cliff where Ka'iana engages the Maui army. Outnumbered and taking several blows, Ka'iana ends up leaping off the cliff, taking Kahikili's chief Pahoa with him into the ocean below. The screen goes dark. We presume Ka'iana is dead. Then he wakes up below deck on the European ship. They try to restrain him, but he fights his way to the top deck just to see Maui fading in the distance.
What an episode.
What an intense episode, yeah. What I really like about Kaahumanu's introduction into the series, what the scene is really showing is a part of Kaahumanu's character that comes into play later on in our history in terms of changing the way that men and women interact and the things that the current kapu system determine are only for men and women. Kaahumanu has a hand in changing those things.
So I think we definitely, this episode does have an emphasis on Kaahumanu. And so we should take an emphasis in discussing her today. And you bring up some really interesting points about that introductory scene where you have the Kilolani looking at the skies. And again, Kaahumanu kind of questioning some of the things and being like, why do I care about that? Just tell me. Yeah. You know, if I want to know, I want to know and share the information with you, with me. And so I think that she is a very strong character if you look at her historically. And also if you look at her in this kind of based on a historical character, but also taking on some fictional attributes, you know, and some dramatic attributes, she's going to be a very powerful force in this series. So one of the things that happens is they're doing this play on the change that she's going to create in Hawaii. Yep. And even when she goes and visits the Tauta and they go and talk about, you know, seeing the future and predicting the future.
Taula! Oa o ka ahumanu. Ke kia ke ali'i o na mahana. Imi au I ka o lelo a'o.
Hiki ka ohana o ka mō I.
And this Taula is a very interesting character to me because part of me really, I really kind of like her, but I'm also kind of like, is that an accurate presentation of what, you know, it's a bit spooky and it's a bit dramatic and it's got some of those like little throws to like Greek mythology and that type of scene. But I do also feel like we don't know exactly how kupua were in Hawaiian society. And this is an artist's rendition and representation of maybe what it was like. So I can appreciate it for that. But in that scene that Kaahumanu and she are speaking with one another and she says, you're going to, the gods fear you. You're going to break the system. This is connected to what you just mentioned, right? Yeah. So Hawaii's system was based on aikapu. And aikapu was created all the way at the time of the gods between Wakea and Papahanaumoku. So it has this really long and strong foundation in our society. And on a very basic level, it means sacred eating. So what does that imply? It implies that the most divine relationship we had with our environment was with food. And if you take care of food, and then you will be taken care of. And it's so simple, right? And it still applies today if we did that, you know? But this is malama'aina, and it was deeper because to us, everything in the environment were manifestations of the gods. Yeah, so it's all of the different gods that eat, that nourish us. So we take care of the gods and spirituality. They take care of us and provide for us. And this Taula does this, tells Kaahumanu, you're going to break this system. And we know what's going to happen in the future. Maybe people don't know, but ultimately, Kaahumanu with her son, Liholiho Kamehameha II, and his biological mother, Keopuoleni, they will come together after the death of Kamehameha and they will share a meal together. And that officially ends the kapu system. Right. And then another war will break out where Kekuokalani and his wife Manono and their supporters will fight to preserve Aikapu, whereas Liholiho and his forces will fight to have Ainua now. There's a lot of confusion about this period of time in Hawaiian history and about, did Kaahumanu and Keopuolani do this because they wanted to take on benefits that they couldn't receive under the Aikapu system? And that is actually, if we really think about it, it's not true. Because look at women in other parts of the world, like in America at the time or in Great Britain at the time. Women in Hawaii had so many more rights, you know? And they could be rulers. They could be the Kuhina Nui, which Kaahumanu is going to become Kamehameha's Kuhina Nui, you know, his lead spiritual advisor. They had every type of opportunity in Hawaii, but there were certain roles that women took on and that men took on in order to maintain balance and pono. And it wasn't something, I believe, that was considered bad. It was something that was considered appropriate. You know, we all had our roles. And so when Kaahumanu breaks the kapu, It really is because times are changing and the aikapu is no longer working. And she, as a manawahine, knows that it is her ultimate kuleana to take care of her people. And if something's not working, they have to change. And so she is this woman of change that embraces change and understands it in a historical context, as well as in this kind of, again, character based on her, but giving a lot of liberties to kind of move with it dramatically and have fun with her role.
Yeah, we talk a lot about how Kahumanu plays such a big role in our history. Could you make an argument that Kahumanu was maybe the most important woman in our history? I think a lot of people could make an argument for Liliuokalani and maybe a few others.
I would say that, you know, most important is such a specific title.
Yeah.
I would say that all of these women and men throughout history have roles that they play that are very dynamic and that sometimes change courses of events and that have a profound impact on us. And Kaahumanu is one of those people who does have a profound impact. She has an impact on her Kane Kamehameha, you know, her husband. And I use that term loosely, right? Because they had multiple husbands and wives and partners. But they actually, from what I've read historically, is they do have a really strong pilina relationship with one another. And she becomes his kuhina nui, which is his lead spiritual advisor. And so everyone always talks about Kamehameha, this incredible warrior unifying all the islands, which he was, but he doesn't do that without aid and without advice. And she's one of key advisors. So when he doesn't necessarily know what decision to make, he will consult Kaahumanu and he will very much listen to what type of advice she offers. So yeah, super important in this period of time and a really hard time in Hawaii's history, right? Where we're having introduction of new people, new ideas, disease. And so we have these dilemmas that we never had to deal with before, and we don't always have solutions for them. And so she's someone that is like, we might not know exactly what to do, but we know that we have to change. And so she's a very strong character in that way.
Yeah. And she's played by New Zealand actress Lucianne Buchanan, who is not Hawaiian. She's Tongan, but raised in New Zealand. And I think of all the non-Hawaiian actors that were cast in Hawaiian roles for this series, I think maybe the most eyebrows were raised about casting a non-Hawaiian woman in the Kaahumanu role. Me, for one, I'm going to wait to see what happens and to see the performance. And from what I saw on screen, I think her portrayal is well done. I think she's an excellent actress, and I'm convinced.
Yeah, I know. This is a kind of a controversial topic, right? Where people were saying these main characters in Chief of War are based off of real historical figures, many of them, right? Ka'iana, Ka'ahumanu, Kamehameha, Kahekili. And there were a lot of people saying, is it going to be Hawaiians? It should be Hawaiians, you know? And I look at it as, I think it would be amazing if Hawaiians were cast in all of these roles. But it doesn't mean that our other Pacific Island cousins aren't doing spectacular jobs fulfilling these character portrayals. And I don't know a whole lot about film, and you can probably tell us more, Russell, but when you're trying to get a project like this and get it the green light, there's so many different components, right? From the producers to the writers to the directors to the money and the studio. And you have to be able to have those selling points that are going to get the project picked up. And maybe sometimes that is those big name actors and actresses that are already well respected and known in the industry. And bringing them into a project like this is going to help make sure that the project happens.
Yeah.
And so I can appreciate that as someone who believes that Chief of War can have a longer impact and a bigger impact than just being one series.
And this is a big, epic, sprawling series. So this is a very expensive production. And by all stories that I've heard, both in media and from Jason Momoa himself, you know, this was a passion project that he put together, that he and Thomas Ponsiewicz pitched. And in order for him to get it off the ground and get it greenlit, he had to have some well-known, established actors in roles. And for that, he turned to Aotearoa. And I've heard him say himself that he would not have had been able to make something like this without the help of Aotearoa. Mm. And so having these non-Hawaiian actors in these large roles, I think it's an opportunity for us to take a big leap forward, and having our Pacific Island cousins help us along the way much better than it being just random people. And if this is a huge success, you know, maybe we'll get some additional projects in the future and additional opportunities for Hawaiians to be the majority cast in those projects. But I don't think we get there without Chief of War.
And we do know that right now Hawaii's film industry is struggling. And so we do, hopefully also Chief of War will help to bring more types of production to our islands, bring more attention. And I know it wasn't entirely shot in Hawaii, but parts of it were. And the cast, a lot of the cast was from Hawaii. So we're creating jobs here, which is something we always want to do. Well, let's get back to Kaʻahumanu. Let's go back more into her again. Something else I wanted to mention from, you know, this initial introduction to Kaʻahumanu is we meet her father, the Chief Keʻeaumoku from Hawaii Island, who, you know, he has a very short role in this episode, but just such a impactful father figure who wants to, you know, do the best for his family, protect them. He knows that war is coming. He very calmly states that Maui has invaded Oahu unprovoked. And so these things are going to happen. Here's the facts. This is what we have to do. And so I very much appreciated and enjoyed this father figure, this Chief of Keʻeaumoku, who's like, this is what we're going to do. And they mentioned this intermarriage that's going to happen. And even though the episode doesn't show it, we know this is the marriage to Kamehameha.
Right.
And Kaʻahumanu does historically become a wife of Kamehameha, his first and his favorite, because Russell, if you had more than one wives, you would have a favorite, you know?
Yeah. I only got one, so she's my favorite.
Good thing. Yeah. Even if you had more, she'd still be your favorite, right? Okay. All right. So our ancestors were so smart about this that they would use marriage and they would use genealogical lines to bind families to one another to promote things like peace and sharing of resources and avoiding wars and various diplomatic relations. And so we're kind of getting a little glimpse into that practice that was used really successfully in Hawaii.
All right. We'll be right back after a short break.
Need a break in your day? Whether you're in your car, your kitchen, or still in bed, Manu Minute brings you the rich sounds of Hawaii's native forests and shorelines. Learn about the long-legged ayo, the clever alala, and more as we listen to the birds' unique songs and talk to experts about their conservation. Get the Manu Minute delivered to your phone or mobile device. Subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
Another thing about this episode I thought was interesting and was unexpected too was the introduction of the European sailors, right? Introduction of people from outside of the islands. I think when we're first watching this, we're not quite sure, you know, where in the timeline we are in terms of like Western contact, but we find out that Captain Cook has already come through and Captain Cook has already died in that infamous skirmish in Kealakekua Bay. I guess I just didn't expect to see Europeans or outsiders come so early, but they added an interesting wrinkle to the story as a whole.
I really liked the introduction of the Ilikea, the Europeans, in this episode, because when they come ashore, they all look very nervous, right? And they're like, being like, let's be quiet, let's get what we need, let's get out of here. We don't want to end up like Captain Cook. I liked that because a lot of times in stories and in other, you know, depictions, the Europeans are always made to be like, oh, they're so fierce and they're these conquerors and they're going in and they're doing what they want. But then here we see them like, oh, man, we don't want to mess with the Hawaiians. Like, they're fierce. They took out Cook. We got to be careful. Let's mind our own business. Let's get out of here. So I thought that was such a great portrayal of how I would have loved to have seen that history.
Interesting to know that word of Cook's death and how he died made it back to Europe already, right? Mm-hmm. So there's already a stereotype or already kind of an expectation when you come to Hawaii. So,
and this is like, you know, a fictitious arrival of other Europeans coming to Hawaii. But we know that after Cook's ships did leave, we started to see adventurers and missionaries and businessmen and just all kinds of explorers coming to our shores. So, and then they're going to actually have historical characters on right. that boat that are going right. to become a part of our larger depiction of what's going on in yeah. history at this time. I like how when Ka'iana and Ka'ahumanu come upon the Europeans, she says, you know, oh, they're sick. They're just looking for food. Like, she's like, I feel bad for them, you know? uh-huh. I appreciated that as well. It's great. And Ka'iana is kind of looking at them like, you know, well, he's a rat-faced yeah. man, and they're pointing a stick at me, and what is going on? If they don't want problems with me, then why are they acting like they right. have problems with me? But I also, like you, think this initial interaction, I give them a lot of credit for how they decided to showcase it, because we have stories of first contact in Hawaii and what went on between Captain Cook and his crew members and the Hawaiians, and stories of hospitality and stories of war and stories of interest, like lots of stories. But this one also shows, like, how would it really look when you've got these two different groups from very different backgrounds encountering each other and being like, oh, you know, yeah. and especially now that they've already had a little bit of interactions. Yeah. And I thought it was just perfect. Like, I could see that actually happening. Yeah.
Earlier in the episode, when Ka'iana and Ka'ahumanu are in the caves, he mentions that the paleskins are so easily defeated. And just thinking about, like, the kind of confidence or the kind of hubris that has already grown from Captain Cook's death. He probably was standing there at this river in this confrontation with these sailors that had just landed. And he probably thought he could probably just wipe them out by himself. He was probably already confident that he could take them all out.
I'd put my money yeah. on him yeah. too. So what's interesting is that when the Maui warriors were kind of tracking
yeah.
and
yeah.
they came upon the Europeans as well, what did they steal? They stole the gun.
Right.
They
right.
didn't take anything else. And what we know is that Haole Mana in Hawaii during that period of time becomes their weapons.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah. because like the guns, the cannons, the, yeah. the metal, the iron, those are things we didn't have in Hawaii and we couldn't make mm-hmm. because we don't have the natural resources right. to produce those things. And even though our warriors were obviously experts and they had very effective tools and weapons yeah. that they could utilize, we know that our kupuna do start to learn and acquire these items and trade for these items. Kamehameha uses them as right. he unifies the island. Some historians argue if it hadn't been for some of the Western weapons he had, would he have been able to take down some of the forces that he right. did, you know? Yeah. So I think the film is in a very kind of artistic way already yeah. starting to show that, you know, what do the Ilikea bring? They bring weapons. Yeah. That's really all that right now is seen as kind of valuable in their encounters with these people. And so we're going to have to see, right? Are these going to be some good characters, some bad characters, some cook characters? What are we going to have going on with them?
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see, especially with the sailor that gets lost and ends up on the canoe with Ka'ahumanu and Ka'iana's family. I believe that's John Young, who ends up being a consultant to Kamehameha when it comes to war. The Young family on the Big Island, I know them, you know, and they're descendants. So it was interesting to see the depiction of their ancestor, knowing that he'll play prominently in the series going forward.
And with this second episode, I think that they make a lot of connections to historical events, mm-hmm. to histories that we've learned about or that have been documented. But they also give themselves a lot of artistic freedom to kind of go on different tangents, yeah. to kind of develop characters in maybe ways that we haven't really seen them develop before historically. Right. And I believe that that also is valuable. You know, Chief of War is not meant to be everybody's history class.
Right.
It's meant to be entertaining and to also hopefully get people to start saying, hey, I want to learn more about Ka'ahumanu. I'm going to go do some research on her. Or I want to learn more about what actually happened during this period of time. And if it encourages viewers and students and listeners to go and be like, ah, I'm going to go do my own research. I'm going to go pick up a book. I'm going to go, you know, see what's out there. Then what a cool type of thing to leave behind as well.
I think we're at a point where we can jump into what has kind of become my favorite part. These categories that I introduced in the last episode, I think these are fun opportunities for us to kind of just talk about some obscure stuff or some little things that we pick up on.
I agree. Along the way. There's so much in the episodes that we can't possibly talk about it all. And we apologize if you're like, why didn't they mention this from the episode? But we are on a time constraint here.
Right. We'll start with most impactful or chicken skin moment.
I have two. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I got to do both. But my first one would be Kahekili enters in the hale soon after the battle concludes on Oahu and he's going to meet Ka'iana. He believes Ka'iana's in the hale, but instead he finds Ka'iana's broken war club. And this was a chicken skin moment for me because as a viewer, you know exactly what this means. It was dramatic. It was artistic. It was film worthy. Mm-hmm. And we know that this is saying, hey, we're going to war. And I think it was more impactful than any dialogue between the two characters ever could have been. My other kind of chicken skin moment would be, you know, Ka'iana escapes the Maui warriors. He jumps off the cliff. And he passes out. And when he wakes up, he's on this foreign ship. And you see Maui getting smaller in the background. And he says one word. And that word is Hawaii.
Hawaii! Maui!
It's all right, lad. All right, you're safe with us. We're not turning back.
And Hawaii means to return to go back to. And, you know, in the first two episodes, we've seen Ka'iana portrayed as this very powerful warrior. We've seen him angry in many scenes. We've seen him plotting, preparing, very confident in what he does. But for the first time in this situation, we see him being completely vulnerable. Yeah. And he is Hawaii. Like, this is the moment for me in the film where I'm like, this is Hawaii, because he's looking at Maui. He's longing to go home, even though home is all these warriors trying to kill him. Like, that's where he has to be. That's where he wants to be. And I just thought it so perfectly portrays the intense love that so many of us, that our people feel for our islands. And it doesn't matter if things aren't right at home. You still want to be home. Yeah. I felt so terrible for him, like, because he's on this ship. He's lost. He doesn't know where he's headed. And he just wants to be home. And there's a chanter saying, "Awe." And "Awe" means it's an expression of affection, but also to show extreme grief. Mm-hmm. And it's like this grief of leaving your islands and not knowing if you're going to come back and him being lost as a result. And so it made me so sad to see that. And it was unexpected. And to just have a word like Hawaii being that word, like, go back, take me back, return. I thought it was incredible.
And I was going to save this for a little bit later, but I'll just mention it right now. That's exactly how I felt every time I would leave Hawaii and go back to Colorado, where I lived for 15 years. I was just always heartbroken every time I got on a plane and every time I had to watch the islands disappear behind me as I went back to where I had to be for the moment. So that scene, it kind of really got me, because I know that feeling of wanting to be home, but having to go where my path was taking me.
Yeah. And whether, like you said, it's a path that maybe you chose or a path like Ka'iana's that he just stumbled on, you know? We all have family, friends, or even personal experiences of having to leave our islands and it being very difficult.
Category number two, character.
Oh, wait, what was your chicken skin moment?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're right. My chicken skin moment. Oh, it's the scene with Ka'ahumanu and Taula. My parents took me to church all my life, and the church takes a lot of time to point out that Ka'ahumanu broke the kapu system. And so I've known that story for a long time from that point of view. It's a great use of foreshadowing and kind of a nod to us who know our history.
In that scene that you bring up, I didn't completely like how unsure Ka'ahumanu seemed of herself, because Ka'ahumanu to me has always been this very kind of bold character. But like you said, I did really like that kind of interaction between her and the Taula. Whether I thought it was historically accurate or not, I thought it was a really kind of intriguing moment, and how they brought in that the gods are afraid of you and we know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of cool, like how they did it that way.
All right, so the Second category, character that brought the most heat or had the performance that we really liked.
Okay, mine's is Kupuohi.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Yeah.
She is played by Teauohine Pehinga. And I thought she was just like fire in this episode. We see her make important decisions for the ohana. She understands exactly what her husband Kaiana needs at many points without discussion. She breaks up a fight between Nahi and Namake. And she also makes the decision to set sail with Ka'ahumanu to Hawaii. And I thought her portrayal in all of these scenarios was expert.
I really admire the way they've written that character as well. There's so many times in a lot of series where the wife or the spouse or the partner is written as one more obstacle to overcome. Sometimes they're portrayed as like nagging or being a drag on the main character. And I'm so glad that she's not this kind of stereotypical naggy wife.
Yeah, no, she enhances him and likewise. So they very much need each other to do what they have to do.
For me, it was Pahoa. I'm pretty sure he's my favorite character over these first two episodes. It's veteran actor and musician and firefighter Ocean Kawili. He's that classic loyal lieutenant that sees his general as kind of the end-all be-all. He's going to follow him to the ends of the earth. And he's also still pretty bitter from Kaiana's previous betrayal when he abandoned Maui for Kauai, and his venom for Kaiana and his family is just so apparent. Kawili plays it with a real restraint, and I think it's just a masterful performance. There's so much bubbling beneath the surface of the character. I'm just really blown away by Ocean. He steals every scene that he's in.
He does a very good job of making this character come to life and making you just kind of see that hatred that he has. And even the conflict that he has with Kupule, who's played by Brandon Finn, right? Which is Kahekili's son. Whereas Kupule wants to be more like, let's be more diplomatic. Yeah. Let's capture him, bring him to me. We're going to discuss this. And Poa's like, forget that.
Right.
You know, like the time for discussion is done.
Category three, most questionable moment.
Okay, so mine's, it's a small moment. You might have missed it in the film, but Namake and Nahi are disagreeing with one another about whether or not they should go look for Kaiana or if they should continue to wait for him. And Kupuohi wants them to all wait together, and the two brothers are kind of having this argument. And Nahi ends up saying, when we translate it into English, something along the lines of, a wife waits, a brother fights to bring him home. And so this statement to me was like, meh, like, hello, we're showing all these very strong female characters, like with Ka'ahumanu and developing her role, and Kupuohi and Heke, all these strong female characters. And for him to say something like that to me was very disrespectful to Kupuohi, and I thought was just uncharacteristic of what we would have seen in this type of family dynamics that they have. I didn't think that it made sense for him to, you know, say something that is so negative of this woman that he is very closely tied to. I thought it was very Western kind of placed in this Hawaiian context, and it didn't fit. And it stuck out to me as something that I was like, yeah, I wasn't too fond of
it. Oh man, I wouldn't have picked up on that. So glad that you pointed that out. For me, okay, this is gross. I probably shouldn't talk about this on a HPR project of any kind, but I can't help it. It crossed my mind. There's that scene where we see the European sailors. They're at a river. They're drinking water, probably cleaning up a little bit. One of the sailors is in the bushes pooping. And after he stands up and pulls his pants up, a couple of the Maui spies, the spies for the Maui army that are kind of trying to find out where Kaiana are, they creep up behind him and they kill him. And the whole time, I'm wondering if they're stepping in his poop. And so it just kind of made me think.
You it's know, your like, attention to detail, Russell.
Yeah. So just an observation for me. Number four, our president CEO's favorite category, the most Momoa moment.
So my most Momoa moment in this episode was the exchange of looks shared between Kaiana and Kupuohi when the Maui warriors uncover Kaiana in the forest. And there's a pretty good couple seconds where they cut back and forth between Kaiana and Kupuohi, and they're staring at each other so intensely. And they just tell a whole story to one another through that gaze. And I believe that after this, Kaʻiana takes off running, draws the Maui warriors one way, while Kupuohi with Namake and Nahi continue to go to search for Heke. And so it was that look to me that was a Momoa moment that now became a Momoa Te Au moment for the books.
That expression on his face, so Momoa.
So Momoa.
Here's a couple more. It's the third or fourth time they cut to Kaʻiana running from the Maui warriors, where he's in slow motion and his hair is kind of just bouncing back and forth, and it's so cinematic and he just looks so cool.
Like when Kupule is chasing him and they're showing them both. Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And then when he and Kaʻahumanu run into the European sailors at the river, there's this wide shot where the 6'4 Kaʻiana is standing on one bank and the sailors on the other. And the sailors are just intimidated as hell by the hulking, you know, shredded beast of a dude that Kaʻiana is.
Thank you. That was a great image, right? And that's the image that we, you know, this almost awe, like you said, that these Europeans have of these people. And even if you look at what was written in the journals of Cook and his men, they write that Hawaiians had just this incredible physique, you know, and they knew nothing about our diet and our lifestyle, but they were just impressed. They're like, they are just incredible, look healthy beings. Yeah. And so this definitely shows that.
What prop or artifact would you want from this episode?
My favorite character in this episode, as I've already mentioned, is Kupuohi. And so I would love her pahi, her knife that she uses. She holds it against her brother-in-law's neck in a scene when the scene I had just talked about where Namake is kind of arguing and they're fighting and she holds it against Nahi's neck and basically is like, woki, like knock it off, you know? And so, I would like that pahi.
For me, it's the wild piglet.
Fun. Yeah, so, you want that running around your house, Russell?
Well, I would put it in a pen in the backyard. There's that scene where Kaʻiana is trying to escape the Maui warriors following after him. He's hiding in this really thick grass and he sees a mama pig kind of foraging around ahead and he kind of turns around and he sees this little wild piglet hanging out. So he grabs that little piglet and at the right moment, he flings it at the warriors. The piglet squeals and here comes the mom. When I was younger, my brother used to chase boar all the time back home. And he would be coming home from school or something and he would stop and he would chase sows and their piglets trying to capture one. And one day he did. He managed to grab one. And then eventually,
How do you taste?
Eventually they ate him.
I'll take that little piglet. Yeah, great choice. I don't want the piglet, but I'll come to your house for the paina when it's ready.
Okay. All right. And then the last category, our hot take or prediction for the next episode or the series finale.
Kaʻahumanu Ma are traveling to Hawaii now by Vaʻa. She's betrothed to Kamehameha. So I predict we're going to meet Kamehameha very soon. And his and Kaʻahumanu's story, it's really going to start to develop from here on out. The ʻiliʻaina they took is going to become one of Kamehameha's friends and advisors. I think you also predicted that.
Yeah.
And either that or they're going to sacrifice him. You know, one or the other.
Yeah.
And Kaʻiana's headed somewhere. We don't know where he's headed, but we obviously know that he doesn't want to go, but these travels are going to be very impactful for him. I predict, as everyone does, that he's going to come back. You know, he's not going to stay wherever he's headed in the world. We know historically that Kaʻiana did leave the islands and go to places like China, to Amelika, places in America. So he was a traveler. So let's see where this voyage takes him and what he encounters and then how he's going to bring that home to Hawaii. I think it's going to have a big impact on him.
It kind of just breaks my heart to know that he's stuck going somewhere where he doesn't want to go. And in my head, I can just imagine that his family is just going to be crushed and heartbroken. Probably imagine that he died somewhere on Maui at the hands of Maui's army. And I just feel for them that they're going to have to go through this grief period. But my prediction is that he's going to find a way to return, which we know historically he does. And there's going to be this really emotional reunion with him and Kupuohi. Mm. And if I end up crying, then they've done a really good job of writing.
Prior.
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. I mean, it happens, but not really. But if I end up crying, then I know that the writers did a great job of setting this up and the actors did a great job of allowing me to connect emotionally to the story. That is it for this episode of Feathers and Fire, HPR's Chief of War After Show podcast. I'm Russell Subiono.
I'm Mehana Makaina'i. Thanks so much for listening. This episode was written by myself and Russell and produced by Russell and Savannah Harriman-Pote.
All credit for getting the word out about this podcast goes to the HPR marketing team, Liberty Peralta and Sylvia Flores, as well as the person who literally ensures our audio files are uploaded properly, that's Sophia McCullough.
Mahalo nui to HPR's president and CEO, Meredith Artley. Without her willingness to experiment with different approaches to storytelling, this podcast would not exist. And I'm sure one day we'll actually get to meet.
That's because we record early in the morning before Meredith gets to the office. Our theme song is Clarity by Kenny Endo from the album Eternal Energy. Learn more about Kenny and his music, as well as his traditional and contemporary Japanese drumming school, Taiko Center of the Pacific, at kennyendo.com.
Chief of War Episode 3, City of Flowers, will air on Friday, August 8th, and our next podcast episode will be available the next day, Saturday, August 9th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Aloha, and thanks so much for listening.
Until we meet again, pipi holo ka'au.